Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 424. My goodness, I'm just breaking out in a sweat. Did I say all of those other episodes? Good heavens. Oh, my goodness. So this is episode 424 of Her, the podcast where, well, you're going to hear the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and her procrastination. Oh no, it's the P word right up there with perfectionism and paralysis. Oh my goodness gracious. And I have my wonderful, wonderful friend, Dr. Tim Pitchell. Hey, Tim, how are you?
Hi, Pam. Very well. Nice to be with you again.
Awesome. And he's going to be joining me again. And he is a repeat offender. He has been on the podcast before to enlighten us. And it's time to do it again. Listen, we've got a terrific show coming up. And just before we begin, know that this episode is made possible by our friends at Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, Vitamins. Now, ladies, you know how it goes. You try to get in all your little greens and vegetables and fruits, and you know how your day goes too. Like you never even saw any of them all day long. So you need to be able to have a backup, and that's where the Solaray Liposomal Multivitamin for Women comes in. Please run on over to Solaray.com and learn more about what you need as a woman in terms of your multivites and more. Okay, and here's your first reminder to hop on over to iTunes, click on it after the episode, rate and review the show because we love your feedback. We just love it. I'm just saying. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Okay, well, it's time, right? It's just time. How many people just say, oh my gosh, the time just went past me. I had all these great ideas, and once again, I procrastinated. I let it all kind of like melt away, and now you sit there all wrapped up in shame, blame, and guilt, and it's just the whole thing is ugly. All right. My wonderful guest, Dr. Tim Pitchell, wrote a book called Solving the Procrastination Puzzle, A Concise Guide to Strategies for Change. Honestly, when he wrote this, I just fell all over myself to get a copy and listen to his beautiful narration as well on Audible. Because what he says is so practical and so welcoming to people who are absolutely strung out on procrastination, just the whole issue. So who is he? Well, Dr. Pitchell is a recently retired, lucky dude, university faculty member since the 1990s. Oh, you look so young. Tim spent his research career studying why we can become our own worst enemy with procrastination. And what he basically found was it's an emotion regulation problem. A lot of people don't know that. So we're going to be getting right into that. And I absolutely can tell you this book is a bestseller and is honestly seminal. What's really beautiful about it is it's not like 1,000 pages. It is really easy to read and to digest. So, Tim, welcome back to the Her podcast.
Thank you very much, Pam, and thanks for that generous praise of the book. It is short, and I'm pleased that it is.
I know, and we love you for that.
Yes. Well, there's nothing quite as perverse as writing a long book on procrastination. It's just going to create something else we'll put off.
I know, seriously, I have so many books people have written that literally I use as doorstops. I mean, they're long, they're big, they weigh more than I do. It's ridiculous. And this is why I love this book. Let's start right on in. What got you going about procrastination in the first place?
Thank you for that. That's a great place to start. I did my own graduate studies. I didn't study procrastination. I did procrastinate a fair bit, so I know it from the inside out. But I was studying people's well-being. And how could we predict their well-being? How could we predict their happiness, their life satisfaction? And we were looking at their personal projects. So what are your goals and how are they going? And what we found was that if you had a lot of goals on which you weren't making any progress, on which you were procrastinating, I could predict your well-being. It was in the toilet. I never looked back at that moment. I thought, there's a whole story here about why is it, as you said in that intro, we become our own worst enemy. Because I interviewed people for this doctoral dissertation as well, and very talented people, and they would be lamenting their inability to move forward. So not getting started is really a serious issue.
So when people are not able to start, it's almost like a mystery. It's like, what is the actual problem here? It seems so logical, so obvious. You know, you almost think of the Nike logo, just do it. You know, they tell you to just to get into those sneakers and kind of run for it in a big way. But it mystifies people. And this is why you turn it on yourself and you start going down the rabbit hole of shame, blame, and guilt. Like, I'm an idiot. I can't get this. What the heck is going on here? There's something horribly wrong with me and all the rest of it. So take it away.
Well, the shame, blame, and guilt. I liked how you spoke to perfectionism because that's a huge thing here. But let's back it up a little bit and define procrastination. Because delay is part of life. We purposely delay things. Right now, I've got a whole bunch of tasks that I need to do, but many of them have been delayed because there are other more important things to do first. That's just how practical reason works. And then there's some things that are getting delayed because just last week where I live, we had an ice storm. I don't know if all your listeners will understand what an ice storm is, but it's freezing rain that builds up on things and it just takes down trees. So we lost our power. I live on a farm. I lost lots of fences. So this is inevitable delay. Now some things are going to wait because inevitably I have to do other things first. And your listeners can't see where I'm sitting, but I'm sitting in my porch and next to me is a picture of my father. And he passed away in 2016. It was a big loss, and not surprisingly in my life, and the wheels came off the track. But never once did I say to myself, oh, Tim, you're such a terrible procrastinator, right? Things got delayed because I needed to do some other kinds of work. And that's delay due to emotional problems. So there's three right off the top: purposeful delay, inevitable delay, and delay due to emotional problems. So if we look at our lives, we're going to see those sorts of delay. But then there's this other form of delay, a voluntary delay of an intended action, despite expecting to be worse off for the delay. And that's that self-defeating part of procrastination. We kind of know that, you know, I made this intention to do this today, but here comes the procrastinator song. I don't feel like it. I don't want to. I'll feel more like it tomorrow.
Oh, it's that tomorrow thing.
Oh, yes. Well, we got to get into that too, because present self and future self and tomorrow, there's a whole story there. But if we're starting with this foundation, we got to understand that procrastination is a certain form of delay where we know that we're probably going to be worse off for this delay, but we want to do it anyhow, and it's voluntary. So many people think, oh, but it's a time management problem, just a terrible time manager. No, actually not. Like, you can have a daytimer all planned out and you get to that next task, it's on your list and you think, I don't want to, I don't feel like it, I'll feel more like it tomorrow. See, because what's happening there is you're having some sort of emotional response to that task. Lots of times, if we're not very mindful, we just have a very visceral, immediate response. We call this the amygdala hijack, because that limbic system of our brain, the amygdala, which I'm sure your listeners have heard about before.
Fight and flight.
That's right. We light up. And in this case, what we do to cope is avoid. So what is procrastination? It's an avoidance coping response. We learn very early in life that if we get rid of the task, hey, I can get rid of some of those negative emotions, at least for now. But that's what makes it so irrational, because the task isn't going away and it comes back to bite you on the butt with less time and more pressure. So there's a certain irrationality with procrastination. And the key thing here, it's not a time management issue, it's an emotion regulation issue. If you want to solve the procrastination puzzle, you need to learn better emotion regulation skills.
Are there people whose background as children, or how they grew up and back and forth, maybe they didn't have good mentorship, as it were, in emotional regulation. Maybe they had a chaotic household growing up. Maybe there was trauma. I'm thinking of the people who would be at highest risk to a certain degree for really kind of ugly procrastination that gets in the way of their ability to move forward in life.
Trauma is quite ubiquitous, isn't it? That depending how you define it, of course, we often think of really horrendous forms of trauma, but many of us have experienced trauma in our lives. And there's lots of good insights in this by Gabor Maté, for example. These things that light up that amygdala, you quickly went to fight or flight. And when we have that limbic response to the world, and trauma will kind of get us sensitized to that, then sure, we're going to learn coping mechanisms that quickly get us away from our emotions. So yes, I think those can be triggers for us. Very few studies have been done on trauma and procrastination in particular. I'll go back to your original point, though, is that many of us never learned very many good coping skills for emotion regulation, just beyond avoiding, right? We avoid difficult conversations. We avoid being with people that make us uncomfortable. So this is just another form of that. We're going to put off that task, even though in the end, it comes back to bite us on the butt.
Right. And so other things that really distinguish types of procrastination, I'm thinking, is there a gender specificity here?
We don't see that in research. We see both men and women procrastinating about the same amount. Remember, we're doing these studies typically with undergraduates, and we're doing it with paper and pencil measures. And it's always person by situation. And so I think if we tease down into that more, we might see differences in workplace procrastination versus procrastination at home. I know after years of working in this area that I'll be talking to a group of professionals, let's say lawyers, and people come up and say, could you come and talk to my husband about his procrastination at home, for example? So as much as the research isn't showing these things, by no means should we then conclude that, yes, there are no differences between men and women. There's all sorts of differences between men and women. We just haven't teased them all apart. But it's not the main part of the story, because we all have to do emotion regulation. And so we all get to a point where we use avoidance for emotion regulation. So let's jump ahead, though, then to say this notion that you said, yes, tomorrow. Well, there's an interesting story there as well, that we've got present self, and present self's trying to think about future self. Now, Hal Hirschfeld, now this is, he's a guy you should speak to in the near future. He's got a new book coming out in June of this year. And Hal and I have spoken extensively about his research, because he talks about this discrepancy between present self and future self, or this notion of self-continuity. So for example, in one really interesting study he did, he had people come into the lab and they were given a resource allocation task. Their job was to take, say, here's $10,000, what would you do with it? And would you travel? Would you buy things? Would you save? And he did a very subtle manipulation. People would be in a room with this task and they'd be shown an image, and the image was of them. It was either an image of them now or an image of themselves digitally aged to about my age, to about 68, right? So that now their hair is graying and they're thinner in the face and they've got wrinkles. So you're seeing an avatar of your aged self or an avatar of an image of yourself. And lo and behold, people do different things with the resource allocation based on what they saw. Not surprisingly, I'm sure listeners are way ahead of me. If you're looking at older self, it's like, ooh, gee, you know that old guy there? Because I'm thinking of Tim here. He could use some extra bucks when he retires. And so they put more away for retirement savings. So if we can learn to bring future self closer, and in this case, it was with an avatar, but even just doing some time traveling, we've done some of this research ourselves, where we imagine future self, we develop more empathy for future self. And that empathy is related to less procrastination. So there's a tension here between present self and future self. It's an important one.
That tension is fascinating. You know, the future self piece is, for instance, a real huge problem with people who have addictive disorders. It's all now, in the present, give it to me now. I have to have the satisfaction and reward immediately, even if it literally costs you your life. So there is no future self there, because there's no connection between action and consequence. But with future, as you're describing it, you know, the way I do it, and I learned this from you, all right? So you didn't even know you were teaching me, but here it comes. And that is, I immediately think about how really good I'm going to feel. And even if I have a task ahead of me where I am dividing it up into 10 pieces to make it digestible, just how wonderful I'll feel when I get that first hour's worth of work done and then give myself a reward, you know, of walking outdoors with the dogs, of doing, you know, calling a friend, doing something I find joyful, not taking all day here, but, you know, just a little something, something to acknowledge my little achievement there. And then think of my next future self. So I just keep doing this little leapfrog thing. How does that sound to you?
Well, it's so important. And there's two things I'll add to that is that on the one hand, you said earlier, the Nike expression of just do it. Well, just do it can be overwhelming. Like, because if I think of just do it, you mean the whole thing? And that can freak me out. And there I am emotionally coping again. Instead, what you've described so well there is just get started. And, you know, the episode even has that in there that's so important. Because you're absolutely right that when we make a little progress on a goal, research has shown us that our well-being actually goes up. There's an upward spiral. Most of your listeners, if they're listening because they have an issue with procrastination, know the downward spiral of we put things off, and as you talked about, guilt and shame, right? But there's an upward spiral. As if you have that success, make a little bit of progress, it fuels your well-being. And by all means, you should celebrate it, as you say, not all day, but embrace it. I'm doing it. The interesting thing is that we don't do projects. David Allen, the famous guru for productivity, taught us this. We don't do projects, we do actions. And so my number one mantra, and you have seen this in the book, is what's the next action? And when I boil it down to what's the next action, and I keep it as concrete as possible, because the human brain has this tendency that we think about things concretely, they belong to the present. And when we think about things abstractly, oh, manana, they belong to the future. So I make it small and concrete, and then I make some progress. And there I'm fueling my well-being. And the ironic thing, of course, is isn't that what life is, right? We only have this moment. We can't do the whole project this moment, but I can make progress. And if I'm making progress, it goes back to the beginning of my story, I can predict your well-being. When you're making progress, you're much happier.
Yeah, sleep improves, the whole thing. You know, it's really interesting when all of us have been busted with procrastination. If you say you've never procrastinated, you haven't lived. You've got a long Pinocchio nose too. So what's interesting is you build up in your mind this monster. It's going to be so hard. I just can't sit down and get this done. And you're like pushing against, you know, a tsunami of emotions and craziness. And then the joke is when you actually sit down and crack into whatever the task may be, it was almost nothing.
Exactly. In fact, one of our first studies we did, long before students had cell phones, I bought pagers. For those listening, a pager was just a little device that physicians used a lot that you could send a signal to say, hey, we need you, because people didn't have cell phones. So we gave all these students pagers and a little notebook, and we paged them throughout the day. It's called experience sampling. And we learned just what you said, but we learned it in a systematic way, and we did the number crunching on it statistically, and we found exactly the story you told, which is on Monday when I'm procrastinating, I'm thinking, oh, that's a dreadful task. It's so stressful, so difficult, so lacking enjoyment. And then when they finally get to it, because later in the week, most people did, we see exactly that. It's not that it's the most fun thing they've ever done before, but it's not that boogeyman that they've created, this monster.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like you think there's that boogeyman in your closet or underneath your bed or something, and only to find out, nah, nothing was there at all. And it's just really important for people to kind of just get to that place and even take the smallest step. You know, you and I are both writers, and we've spent a lifetime in academia writing and all the rest of it. And you know how writing is. Oh my goodness, you know, just sitting down, yeah, you know,
bleed on the page.
You just have this feeling. It's like, oh no, nothing is coming up here. And you know, you have all kinds of things you have to get done. And I have just always, I've found that sometimes, and see how we can apply this to procrastination, I prime the pump. So what I may do is write a friendly email to someone. See, I'm writing. All right. So I'm priming the pump. And then I feel better about the fact that I just created a paragraph worth of interesting stuff, I think. And then I can kind of, you know, flip over to the page that I'm supposed to be writing on. And even if I just do an architecture, a real simple A-frame for whatever it is I'm doing, it's not pretty, it's the first draft, blah, 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 but it's something. And I started. But I like to prime the pump sometimes. I think a lot of people think they just jump right on in and there they have it. And I think you could say this about so many things in life, Tim. Obviously, I'm a physician and I'm all about excellent health and nutrition and all the rest of it. You know, do you have to be cooking some kind of a magnificent meal? Nah. You know, do you know how to slap some walnuts on a, you know, healthy yogurt and eat that? That's a start. That's priming the pump for actually opening this up to something more comprehensive. What do you think?
Well, I like the way you started and said, you know, you've put all those in one place. You're sitting down to write. And what's happening is you're having a little bit of panic. Like, that's a blank page. I have nothing to say. So you've got a strategy there that I've heard other people talk about as well. I've worked with judges who talk about writing themselves into a judgment. You know, like it just gets them warmed up. And that can really work for some people. But another place to be is to acknowledge, first of all, to calm down, right? So a few deep breaths, physiologically calm down. And it can do wonders. Just even just doing that one, I just feel my whole body start to relax. And I think we can forget to do that. So here we are. We know we're going to be writing. And so if I can physiologically calm down. The next thing is, and I liked how you said you're a writer too, in the sense that what that is that it's our common humanity. We know that all people who face tasks like writing have similar experiences. And when we can all acknowledge our common humanity, in this case, it's okay to feel this way, right? It's okay to feel overwhelmed. Everyone feels overwhelmed about these things. Then I can just accept those emotions and not be those emotions. And this is another key mantra of mine. And I learned this from Parker Palmer, another wonderful author. Amongst other things, he wrote this book, The Courage to Teach. He's also written about his own depression. It's a good person to read if you haven't encountered him, Parker Palmer. In any case, he wrote, I can have fear without being my fear, because I can work from some other part of my inner landscape. And that's another personal mantra. I can have this emotion. I don't need to be this emotion. So yes, I'm deeply resentful and bored by this task. Why do I have to do it? I can acknowledge it. I can allow it, but I don't have to be it. And then I can go back a step and say, what's the next action? And you see how those two dance together. On the one hand, I'm doing the emotion regulation. On the other hand, I'm using concrete strategies that you've been advocating, which is I broke it down. I'm keeping it simple. I'm making progress. But we need to acknowledge both. If we just do the emotion regulation, we're not on action. If we just do the action, we're not acknowledging that, yeah, I'm freaking out here. Yeah, it's okay to feel this way. It's our common humanity. We all can feel this way. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. What you're actually doing is you're practicing self-compassion. You're like, hey, there's not a writer I've ever met who hasn't gone through hell one way or the other, trying to figure out what their own little playbook is when they want to sit down and write whatever it may be, a magazine feature, a book, or doesn't matter. You still have to go through the same craziness one way or the other. And just to show self-compassion, what I love to do is, you know, here's another thing. A lot of people don't like to sit down, just sit down and do that, whatever it may be. This is why God made these wonderful desks that I'm using right now.
I can see you're standing,
yes. Desks. I'm standing right now because I can't stand sitting, right? I can't stand sitting. I got to think about that one. But anyway, you know, I'm up, I'm down, I'm up, I'm down. And the other thing too is that I like to exercise before I know I'm going to have to do this writing task, say, for instance, because I find that physical activity primes my brain. Obviously, we have a wealth of knowledge about that. And I just feel more refreshed and energized. And I will tell you that physical activity stokes creativity. And how many people have come up with extraordinarily cool ideas by taking a nice long walk? So that's part of my playbook as well. just to kind of get around all of this one way or the other. Does that hearken to something you like?
For sure. I mean, physical exercise is the elixir. You're a physician. You know this better than anyone. It's the number one thing we have to be prescribing, that and along with sleep. Those two together takes us a long way forward. And then we'd lay out nutrition on top of that, and we've got the whole ball of wax. But self-compassion is another piece of that, and we just kind of brushed over it. I came to self-compassion through a back door of sorts. I had a colleague come up to me and say, Tim, you know, we should do a study on self-forgiveness and procrastination. And I really admire this guy, Michael Wall. He's a prolific researcher. And I thought, I'd like to work with Michael. I said, but Michael, don't you think it'll be forgive and forget? Like, we can do the study, but won't it be that? He said, oh, don't be so sure. And sure enough, let's make a long story short, I was completely wrong. Those participants who forgave themselves for procrastinating at time one were less likely to procrastinate at time two. And I thought, how does that work, Michael? He said, well, imagine you and Pam had some transgression against one another, like, yeah, Tim didn't show up today for the interview. What would be the motivation? Well, it'd be a void. I'd be avoiding Pam. Well, what if Pam forgave you? What if she recognized that it was inevitable delay, like you've described earlier in the podcast, and she forgave you? What would be the motivation then? Well, it'd be approach. He goes, exactly. But you see, with procrastination, the transgression is against the self. And until we forgive ourselves, we just lay on all this other stuff, as you talked about before, guilt and shame. And then what happens? The same thing, emotion regulation, avoidance to get away from it again. So we're just feeding it when we can't practice that self-compassion, because self-forgiveness isn't easy. So that's how I got to the back door of self-compassion. I thought, how do you forgive yourself? Well, first you have to have some self-compassion. And then, interestingly, it comes back to something I said earlier. Where does self-compassion come from? Well, mindfulness is part of it. You know, Kristen Neff.
Gratitude.
Yeah, and common humanity, recognizing that I'm only human. I'm not perfect. And I have to forgive myself. And I think this is so important. And it surprised me, because here I was, you know, thinking that it's really all these other things, like what's the next action and not having a certain emotion. Also is, can I forgive myself? Because you are going to procrastinate at times. As you said, everyone does. And just because you listen to this podcast doesn't mean it's gone in your life. But the next time it happens, you might know, yeah, I can forgive myself and I can try again.
Well, you know, I'm now going to go out on a huge limb. I'm going to represent all of womanhood. I'm just going to do it. You know, this is my podcast. Damn it, I'll make the rules. And so here it comes. All right. When it comes to self-forgiveness, women get an F minus. I mean, come on. What we are is perfectionists. What was wrong with me? Coulda, shoulda, woulda. And we have to kind of take a machete through the forest of all this craziness in our brain, because we're supposed to be, in our minds, deep inside. Even if you say, no, no, that's not me. It is you. If you've ever possessed a pair of ovaries, honey, it's you. So what I'm saying is, we have to deal with these P words. And perfectionism is, I think, a lot more rampant among women than it is men, because we just operate that way, you know? I think it's harder for us to actually show self-forgiveness, because that means that we weren't perfect, and that's okay by us, and we can kind of, you know, get there. But that's just sort of the general feeling I have, representing all of womankind.
Well, you did a good job representing. And I'm going to take that perfectionism. Well, I agree with it. And I agree with it in one sense, is that there's more than one flavor of perfectionism. There's self-oriented perfectionists. And these are people who just really strive to do a good job. It doesn't make necessarily a perfectionism a good thing, because it still can own us in a bad way. Too much rumination about things. But it's a socially prescribed perfectionist. And this is where the gender difference comes in the sense of trying to live up to the expectations of others. And I heard you say that as you're describing that lived experience of perfectionism, the should have, the things I have to do, the ought to do's. So if we find ourselves trying to live up to other people's unrealistic expectations, we've seen in research that it's that socially prescribed perfectionism that's correlated with procrastination. We're more likely to procrastinate. Why? Well, there's that circle again. trying to live up to other people's standards makes us feel bad about ourselves. And we cope how? Through avoidance. It's that running away from things again. But perfectionism is a huge problem. And what takes it apart? Well, that notion that understanding we're not perfect, that's the human condition. As Leonard Cohen has so beautifully sung in his song Anthem, "Ring the bells that still can ring, forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in."
That's how the light gets in. That's one of my absolute favorite quotes. Another thing with women, and this I know for a natural fact, plenty of research behind this, is that they're much more apt to feel anxious. So generalized anxiety disorder and other issues like this are more commonly among women. So when you have perfectionism, procrastination, anxiety gets sandwiched in there somewhere, you have this constellation of mental barriers in there to try to get anything done at all, because you're just trying to wade through so many of these different emotions. And that's one of the reasons why what I loved about your book in the procrastination puzzle is you just kind of got down to a practical level. Okay, we're not going to do Psych 101 here. What we're going to do is just sit your ass down and then take out a pen and paper, whatever you're doing, computer, and just spend 15 minutes and crack the ice. And then pretty much guarantee you, you're going to see that you built this molehill into a mountain. And now let's take it back down to molehill again. And then you're going to start seeing the path forward. Okay, well, I got X done. Now I'm ready for Y. I can kind of see how this all comes together now in this task, whatever it is that I may be doing, et cetera, et cetera. And you also spent some time, I remember, just making your life easy. You can't get anything done in a desk that looks like a bomb hit it. I mean, come on now. And this is where that whole psychology of clutter is absolutely there. So you've got to just, you know, spend a moment, organize, so you can actually get the thing done. Can't write something if there's no pen. How about that computer that doesn't work right now? All of these things help to lay down a successful pathway forward to be able to achieve whatever, even if it's just 15 to 20 minutes worth of a task that you put off.
Yes, let's add two real concrete strategies for listeners built on that. One is this notion that you're describing there about the environment. We call these in psychology, the jargon would be environmental affordances. We're making the environment work for us. Two wonderful philosophers, Joe Heath and Joel Anderson. Joel's a good friend of mine from Utrecht University in the Netherlands. They describe the way we can have extended will, much like we can have extended cognition. We all know extended cognition, but we don't realize it. If I said, what's 3 times 3, you'd just blurt out 9. If I said, what's 286 times 477, you said, I don't do that in my head, right? And you don't. But if I give you a piece of paper and a pencil, or better yet, a calculator, no problem. See, that's extended cognition. You extend your ability to think with these tools. So why do we think our willpower has to be just reside in our head, much like we don't just do math in our head? So as you said, we have to have the environment work for us. And if we're in this environment that's full of clutter and we can't even find a pen to work with, well, of course, then we're setting ourselves up for failure. So instead, we have to set up our environment to work for us. Let's take a couple of examples. Let's take exercise, because it's something we both agree we need to do more of. It's easy for me to get up in the morning and say, I'm going to go for a run, but I'm at the coffee right now, and pretty soon I've forgotten about the run. But good self the night before, who has the good intention, can put running shoes right in front of that coffee maker. So now I've put a trigger in my environment that says, oh yeah, the run. I got to put those shoes on and get out the door, right? Just a little trigger, something that breaks the habit that sets up your environment for success. Now, that's one strategy. And there's more we could talk about with extended will, but that's probably enough. The other one is this notion of an implementation intention. And I spend a lot of time on that in the book, because it's Peter Galwitzer's work, very powerful. You've seen it making a big difference to people in your world with physicians giving advice. And you talked about X and Y. So here's the notion. I have a health behavior. I wasn't flossing my teeth. my dentist said, Tim, you need to floss your teeth. You're getting gum disease, man. And he said, the good news is you only have to floss the teeth you want to keep. And so you can laugh at that. But basically what he was adding is this whole sense of gravitas. Like, you need to floss your teeth. But you know, as much as he said that, I wasn't doing it. I'd be like a six-year-old. I'd get to the sink. I always brush my teeth and I don't feel like I don't want to. Right. And so I'd put it off. So I created an implementation intention. And it's as simple as this. In situation X, I'll do behavior Y. Here we go. When I pick up my toothbrush, because I always did, I'll put the floss on the counter. And when I put down that toothbrush, I'll pick up the floss. That was life-changing. Simple, crazy simple habit. An implementation intention. So I have a plan how to implement that goal. I had a goal, floss my teeth. I never did it. Now I have an implementation intention that gets down to the level of what behavior I'm going to perform and what's going to cue that behavior. And now for those of you who think, Tim, you should floss before you brush, I do now. Because I now
I wasn't going to say anything, yeah. I swear.
Of course, never, but your listeners were. They're going, that's gross, man. Like, you should.
Yeah, it's like, dude, come on now.
Yeah. You know, floss and then brush. Floss, which I can now. But I needed to harness where I was at. And then it became, now I couldn't imagine not flossing my teeth. My mouth doesn't feel clean until I do. But you see, we can all take things that we already have, and we can leverage that self, that habit or that self-control, and create a new habit. It's called an implementation intention. And if listeners want to know more about that, they should just search on the internet for WOOP, W-O-O-P. Dr. Gabrielle Ottingen does a wonderful job of explaining how we can have a wish, an outcome, an obstacle, and a plan, and that plan is an implementation intention.
That's right. And it's actually simpler than you think. When people are constantly forgetting something that is really health promoting, no matter what it is. In your case, it was the exercise thing and the flossing. For other people, it's nutrition. They forget to go to the grocery store. They end up with fast food or, you know, whatever the issue is. How do they get around those? And it's just a matter of sitting down and figuring out what's the easiest thing that they can do, the most accessible thing they can do to literally remind themselves of making a connection with that action that they have to take one way or the other. I have one woman who's always doing smoothies, very healthy protein smoothie and stuff. And that's the good news. The bad news is she doesn't take her damn vitamins, and she needs to for a variety of reasons. I forget. And so I say, good, take out the main vitamin, because there's a number of supplements. She has a medical condition. Take out the main one, the multivite, put it right next to the blender, and we're done. Now what you do is you've already made your smoothie, take your vitamins with your smoothie, and from that moment on out, she goes, why didn't I think of that? And I said, well, we're human.
That's right. And we're creatures of habit, and we give into our emotions. Another place, like this old body of mine really needs yoga. And I know what good things it does for me. And I can think like you did earlier about how good I'm going to feel afterwards. But even then I can say, yeah, but I'm too tired. I don't feel like it. I don't want to. I roll out the mat and I say, Tim, just stand on that mat and stretch up in the air. That's all. Just do that much. Don't think about the whole routine, because I know that you're freaking out about it. Just put the mat down and stand on it and stretch up. Well, as soon as I've done that, you know, then I think I could teach yoga.
It's just that one thing. Just do that sun salutation and you're like, this is ridiculous. I've already started. Everyone out there, we've been talking with Dr. Tim Pitchell, who is an expert in all things procrastination, was a major league researcher in this field, wrote a book that it's been a huge life changer for me. Because it's so simple, so welcoming, and it's called Solving the Procrastination Puzzle, A Concise Guide to Strategies for Change. And you can also listen to him narrate, I'm glad to know you narrate your books too, his wonderful book on Audible, because either way, it'll kind of settle in after a while, and you'll just start remembering some of these wonderful tools that you can actually use. And if you want to go to his website and learn more about his work, just go to procrastination.ca, which is Canada. He is one of our northern friends, as we say in the business, and learn more. But it'll really be worth it, because I know so many of us are struggling with this issue. And it turns out there are a lot of accessible ways to get around this. So Tim, thank you for once again sharing your wisdom with us and helping us all on this crazy pathway to getting through procrastination. Thank you so much for being on the Her podcast again.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
All right. So remember I told you, you're supposed to go over to iTunes right now because the episode has concluded. And I want you to rate and review the show because we're waiting to hear from you. Oh, and another major shout out to Solaray Vitamins, our wonderful sponsor, Solaray, SOLARAY.com. Hop on over there, learn more about what you can do as a woman to be able to have your own back with your nutritional support, especially those multivites. Hey, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter and Instagram at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her podcast on iTunes, Radio MD, Spotify, all of the platforms out there. Hey, listen, thanks for showing up and being with us. Stay well.